Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcioland Podcast. And this episode is brought to you by Euro Fantasy Game, the home of some of the best fantasy football games in the industry. They cover a lot of different leagues, Premier League, Spanish League, Serie A, even the Dutch League, and they have a superb Champions League a challenge as well. And it's also a place where you can read a lot of articles from some frequent guests of our podcast, including John Solano, Chloe Beresford. This week, I wrote about the losers of the season so far in Serie A. I had previously written about the winner. So definitely a great place to catch up on Serie A articles as well. So today we're going to start previewing the big derby on Sunday night. Inter and Milan are going to square off at San Siro. It's exciting. The international break is finally coming to an end. Today we're going to preview the Inter side of things with my colleague from the Marzio site, Gabriele Romano. You'll hear that interview at the end of the podcast. On Thursday, we'll chat with Milan with a guest to cover their end of things. So I figured we'd get you all excited for the derby. I'm joined by our great friend, producer, co-host of the podcast, Alex Goldberg. His YouTube channel is firing on all cylinders. I love the passion on there. But today, Alex is not going to talk about Chelsea. We're going to get into the derby. So, Alex, what I figured we'd do, we're going to, you know, make our picks for the game and preview the game more itself on Thursday's podcast. So I'm going to ask you to compare two players on each team. And let's start with the strikers. There have been a lot of articles written about this. So gun to the head, who would you rather have between Icardi and Higuain?
Woo. On a whole, Icardi versus Higuain. Now, my answer probably would vary if you specified if it was for a game, if it was for a month, a season, if I was starting an actual club. Of course, I would start with Icardi because of age. Now, in a vacuum, I still think I'm going to go with Icardi. There are elements to Higuain and his game that really do appeal to me. I think he's a more complete striker. I think he's definitely a better passer than Icardi. So maybe based on how my team was set up, maybe I would like Gonzalo Higuain because he could play a little bit more with the rest of the team. However, with that said, I think Icardi is truly a special striker right now. Yeah, I was a little worried about him a few weeks ago, but he's turned it on now, and he should be the beneficiary of a lot more goals on this Inter team. And I definitely think Higuain is going to have a good season at Milan as well, but to a different variation. I think Icardi is going to be one of the top five players in Serie A this season. I think Higuain will probably be one of the top 15 players in Serie A this season. I do have Ciro Immobile as my Serie A leading goal scorer at year's end, but I have Icardi not too far behind him. I'm still torn if Higuain will actually break 20 goals. I think he'll have a good season, but I think he'll be more in the upper teens, maybe 20. I think Icardi is bound to get low 20s and honestly get a few more assists than he's used to. Once again, I still think Higuain's the better passer, but I do think Icardi's going to have a pretty sexy stat line by year's end. Overall, I'm taking Icardi, but it's not an easy choice. It really is not an easy choice for me. I like Higuain even at this age, much more than many Chelsea fans did this past summer when Higuain was rumored to come to Chelsea. So, David, I'm taking Icardi, but not by a lot. What about you?
So I purposely didn't give you any time frame, game, start the season. And what I kind of wanted to leave it ambiguous was didn't want to lead you one way or the other. So here's the thing. For me, it's super close. It might sound like a cop-out answer, but I think for Milan, Higuain makes a lot more sense. And for this current Inter, Icardi does. So I almost think, you know, if you were to flip them, I think Inter would probably be just as good. I don't think Milan would be as good. And that's not a knock on Icardi. Higuain is older. I think, you know, you see a lot of people that don't follow Serie A that much, you know, just look at Higuain as a classic nine goal scorer in Trezeguet sense, but he's so much more a complete player. I think, too, he has like an infectious drive, and that's something that you hear a lot from his teammates at Milan. So I think they're perfect for each team. I think it's super close. You know, in one match, you know, if I definitely needed a goal, it would be Cardi. But if I needed a player right now to kind of be a team on the rise like Milan that needs to, you know, take the next step, I think Higuain is a better fit. So now let's talk about the two goalkeepers, with Buffon leaving and Alisson leaving Serie A. I almost feel like, you know, there's definitely is a vacuum at the goalkeeper position. And when we're asked, you know, who are, you know, the best keepers in Serie A, these two names come up a lot. So let me ask you point blank, if you could have one between Handanovic and Donnarumma, and this is for this season, let's not make age a factor, because obviously Donnarumma has a huge edge there. Who would you rather have?
Yeah, David, I'm taking Samir Handanovic. I absolutely am. And I know I'm answering so quickly that it probably sounds dismissive of Donnarumma. It's not that I don't like Donnarumma. I'm not totally scared away by his down year last year. He's been better so far compared to last year this year. But overall, I just don't trust Donnarumma nearly as much as I trust Samir Handanovic. Now, I love to talk about brain farts. I am very loud and obnoxious talking about my own Chelsea players having brain farts. But with goalies, with keepers, I've always had this stance that I would rather the less talented keeper that makes all of the ordinary saves compared to the supreme and elite talented keeper who does have the occasional brain fart. Hugo Lloris is always kind of my example. Now, he had a really good World Cup, but overall, he's that keeper that has supreme talent but just makes way too many mistakes, and I'd rather settle for someone a little bit more sturdy that can't make all the saves. With that said, I think Samir Handanovic can make all the saves, all the saves. I think he is way more of a versatile keeper than Donnarumma. Donnarumma, of course, is not really great with his feet. But getting back to the brain farts, I know Samir Handanovic actually has had some brain farts recently. So to say that he doesn't have brain farts, so I'm choosing him over Donnarumma because I trust him more, is a little bit far-fetched. However, I still trust him way more. You give me one game of huge magnitude, huge importance, and you want me to pick a keeper, I'm absolutely taking Samir Handanovic. I trust him a lot more than I do Donnarumma. Now, my answer can definitely change because I think Donnarumma still is at such a young age where he can absolutely get better and shore up many of his weaknesses in his game. But for right now, I think Samir Handanovic is one of the better keepers in the world. So I am definitely taking Samir Handanovic with this question. Maybe I'm answering way too confidently, but right now, I think Handanovic is absolutely the better way to go. That's my opinion, David. What about you?
I have to say, had we done this question at the beginning of the season, it would have been for me an overwhelming Handanovic. I thought really Donnarumma last season took a massive step back. I don't know if it was the new contract. That certainly played a factor. He was, you know, with a big chunk of Milan's fan base, he had become a pariah. I don't know if that had really gone to him. But I have to say, this season, he's really, really impressed me. Even on the Italian national team, he's done well. So it's become a lot closer for me. I'm still going to give an edge to Handanovic, but nowhere near as much as I would have in the past. Handanovic, you know, does have some brain farts here and there. I'm always shocked, though, at how many Inter fans, when that happens, are, you know, ready to get rid of him, which seems really, really too harsh. It's gotten closer, but I'm going to take by a smidge Donnarumma. So those are two things that we wanted to look at today on Thursday's podcast. Alex and I will make our predictions. We'll preview this a little bit more. We'll have 1,000 names back with his game picks, and we'll have a guest from Milan. We're going to have someone from our great friends at the Milan Weekly Pod. So stay tuned for that. So today we don't obviously have winners and losers, but we do have Twitter questions from our listeners. You guys always are co-writers of the show, and the questions you send in today are really, really great. We're going to cover a lot of bases. So which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, our first Twitter question is, what did you make of Italy's win against Poland on Sunday?
So I, you know, one thing that I'd like to, I saw so many people really, really excited by this win, and you should be. This was probably the best, definitely the best performance since Mancini became coach. I saw some people say the best performance since the Euro. It's possible. I want to say there were maybe a couple of decent games under Ventura that you know, everyone's forgetting after, based on how things ended there. So, you know, I always talked about not being prisoners of the moment. This was a last minute victory. I feel like all the enthusiasm is also probably driven by how low the bar has been set recently with the Azzurri going into the game. There was so little buzz from people that I follow for this Italy game. But there are definitely some positive. I have to say the one thing that stood out to me is Mancini has kind of figured out the lineup that he wants to use. He trotted out basically the same exact team two matches in a row, and I think he's on to something. Mancini has been accused during his coaching career that his style is basically throwing a bunch of stuff against the wall and seeing what sticks. Even when you look at his selection, I think he's already called, like, I could be wrong, over 40 players already, a little bit all over the place, but he stuck with a formation that I think works and makes sense. Most of the players we all want to see play for Italy are out there. I kind of like this offensive trio with Bernardeschi, Chiesa, and Insigne. So that's good. The midfield looks vastly improved. I want to get into it more with the next question. So I think there's definitely a lot of positives that come out of this. I don't want to, you know, go totally crazy over one game, because had you seen the questions we were getting for the podcast before that game, there were people saying already they should get rid of Mancini. He doesn't know what he's doing. But finally having a direction and a set lineup is the takeaway that I have so far.
All right. Yeah, that counts for sure. All right, David, you hinted to this question. Do you believe Marco Verratti can revive his career on the Azzurri playing alongside Jorginho?
It's an interesting question because, look, Verratti's been on the downside. We've had a couple of times Jonathan Johnson from, you know, ESPN that covers PSG brilliantly. And, you know, the first time we had him on, he was raving about Verratti and he was like in Paris. He's like the darling of the fans, and he is. I go to Paris, you know, but I'd love to go even more than I do, but I go there fairly often. And that's something that stood out to me is how much Verratti is beloved there. But the last time he was on, and I also saw some articles that he's written, there was talks about, you know, PSG potentially moving on from him. So I think he has an opportunity to revive his career, not just on the Azzurri, but at the club level, what we saw. I thought against Poland, that was definitely the best performance for Italy that I can remember him having. And it's an interesting because, you know, in a lot of ways, when you think of Verratti and Jorginho, you think of a lot of similar styles. You know, if you had to plug in Verratti into Sarri's Napoli, he probably would be in the Jorginho role. And Mancini plays a little bit differently. So it makes a lot of sense. It's actually worked out quite well to kind of have a double playmaker. Italy is much better passing now in the midfield with those two. I would say one thing that stands out to me on this lineup is there's a lot of good passers. We're going to add Bonucci to the list. In Italy, you would say that now they have a lot of palleggiatori on the team, you know, good passers, ball possession, kind of bring it to the other team. So I'm intrigued. You know, again, I don't want to overreact to one game. Even Jorginho has to get, you know, more experience playing on the Azzurri. But there's definitely reason for hope. And I think Verratti can kind of reestablish himself and it can then translate to the club level.
All right. Fair enough. David, how about this? What does the future hold for Barella? Is the reported $60 million price tag inflated?
So we've been advocating on the podcast for, you know, I'd say about a month that Barella needs to be one of those players that Mancini plays no matter what. Chiesa's another one. Bernardeschi probably is another one. I'd like to see Romagnoli out there. I'd like to add him to that list. Now I get Chiellini and Bonucci is a guarantee if you're going to go with a classic four-man defense and you need to win, you know, probably that makes the most sense. But when you think of long-term, I think Romagnoli has to be on there. And Barella, look, with what we've seen on him on the Azzurri and especially at Cagliari the past two seasons, to me, he absolutely needs to be on there. I kind of like that midfield, Jorginho, Barella, and Verratti. Granted, not the tallest midfield by any means, but that could work quite well. As far as his price tag, I don't think he'll go for 60 million euro. That is the price tag that's been thrown around. I think 35 to 40 million makes more sense. I always look too at the selling club. I mean, he's a homegrown player for Cagliari. He'd be a pure plusvalenza. That counts for something. I definitely think this is his last season at Cagliari. It's not out of the question. We saw Cagliari sell Nainggolan the January transfer window 4 or 5 years ago. Maybe there's a repeat with Barella. I mean, a lot would depend as to where they are in the standings. But it'd probably be a good thing if he stays where he is and stays a full season. My gut tells me that his next move will still be in Italy. He's been linked to both Inter and Milan. I think they make a lot of sense. Maybe Roma regrets not going for Barella over Cristante. Maybe that looks like a deal if they could do over, they'd go for him. Maybe Roma gets back in the mix for him. You can't count out Juve either. So my guess is his move's going to be in Italy next. Gun to the head, I would say Inter. They have a good relationship with Cagliari. Their president's actually an Interista. You know, I don't know how much that counts, but my guess is maybe Inter, and I don't think it'll be for 60 million.
All right. How about this, David? Juventus have been linked to Grimaldo. Where does that leave my boy, Alessandro, and Spinazzola?
So Grimaldo is a Mendes client that definitely helps Juve. You wouldn't have said that a year ago, but now Juve is in deep with Mendes. That certainly helps. So right away, and my friend Fabrizio Romano had an article about it. I tweeted it yesterday. You know, I got some questions right away on where does that leave Spinazzola? Where does that leave Alessandro? Let's start with Alessandro. For one, Juve and Alessandro still haven't agreed to a new contract. I know Juve has tried. It doesn't seem they have huge urgency for him. It's kind of hard to set a price tag for him wages-wise because he's been better, I would say, so far this season than last season. But I also wouldn't say he's been as good as 2 years ago. But on the other hand, very hard to find good left backs. I think that's probably the scarcest position on the market. Spinazzola, on the other hand, he's recovering from an injury. Spinazzola is a very versatile player. He can play on the right as well, can play in the midfield. And keep in mind, with Allegri, who rotates a lot, especially the wing backs, Juve is going to need two starting caliber left backs. Just look at how much they used the Asamoah last season. And look, Grimaldo could be, you know, a long-term starter. Having him and Cancelo, that's like a very young duo, two players that then can also have even more chemistry since they could play on their national team together. So, you know, if Juve goes for Grimaldo, my guess is they'd probably move on from Alessandro and then make Spinazzola what Asamoah used to be for them. And Spinazzola, like Asamoah, is a versatile player.
All right, David, this is the guy everyone's talking about, and I'll pronounce his name correctly. Where is Piontek most likely heading next?
I was going to test you to see if you're going to pronounce it correctly. So you passed. Well done. This is a very interesting situation. And look, there's a lot of talk on Piontek. A lot has been written about him. There's a ton of buzz for him. You look at how insane his scoring streak has been to start the season. So it's not surprising that there's so much buzz about him, especially during the international break. And look, you know, I know some people have been tweeting, look, you know, Genoa can't do the same mistake, and I put that in air quotes, that Torino did with Belotti and Lazio with Milinkovic-Savic. You guys know how I feel about those two players. I won't beat that dead horse once again, but Genoa is very different. They're very willing to sell. Preziosi is their president, always eager to move a player. Now, is it going to happen in January? Hard to tell. Not impossible. Genoa actually is fairly deep at striker, but Piontek's been really sensational for him. They paid about $4 million for him. He has a low salary. They barely have anything to amortize. Even if they sold him for 10 times that, $40 million, that would be a fantastic deal. But there's a big but here. You know, sample sizes and not being prisoners of the moment. Our friend Adam Digby had a really good series of tweets on Piontek, and I'll read them verbatim. A lot of people getting very excited about January striker Piontek. He scored 13 goals in 8 games, but let's pump the brakes a little here. 13 goals, sure. 4 came in a cup game against the Serie B side Lecce. And then he scored all against newly promoted teams, Empoli, Parma, Frosinone, and then Sassuolo, Bologna, and Chievo, and only 1 against Lazio, a top team. So we'll see a lot more. Now Genoa has a lot of tough games coming up. They play in the next 6 matches, Juventus, Milan, Inter, Napoli, and Derby against Sampdoria. So I think Adam makes a great point here. I think we're going to know a lot more about Piontek after this stretch. I know he scored for Poland too. Let's see there. As Adam pointed out, look, there's been other strikers that have done well at Genoa, and they've been a mixed bag. Borriello, Iago Falque, Pavoletti, Simeone. So let's see what happens. I think Adam's point, after the stretch of games, we'll know a lot more what Piontek is about and what the market is for him. Very early, there's been buzz about him in Napoli. De Laurentiis said that he's already spoken to Preziosi and Piontek's agent. We've seen him linked to Roma. Let's see what happens there, if Dzeko goes. It's already been linked to Premier League clubs. But again, let's see what the perception is of Piontek after the upcoming matches.
I can tell you, every single Chelsea fan wants that kid, that's for sure. All right, David, next Twitter question. What do you make of Milan already making moves for the January transfer window?
They have to. I think, you know, one thing that stands out to me is, if you remember in the summer, Leonardo and Maldini, they came in pretty late in the game because of all the ownership situation. And look, everything considered, between the financial fair play restrictions they inherited, and man, we could do a whole podcast on Milan's financial statement from the 1 year with the Chinese. Whoosh, that was rough. So in any event, they inherited a horrible situation. They came in late in the game. I think all things considered, they did a really good job in the summer transfer window, although Bakayoko's been so bad, and I was expecting it to do better. Might already be going back to Chelsea. So in any event, they have to make up for lost time. Their ownership group, Elliott's very aggressive. I think Elliott, you know, wants to make Milan great again and then potentially flip it for a big fee, or maybe they want to be in the football game. But Elliott's committed to making Milan more valuable, regardless of what their future plan are for them. So they've already made the big move for the Brazilian midfielder to come in. I expect Milan to be even more active in January. So I think Milan, you know, sees an opportunity. A Champions League spot isn't out of the question. I see Inter, Juve, Napoli as clearly being better than Milan. After that, I think they can compete with Lazio and Roma. Now, I give a slight edge to those two teams. But with a good acquisition in January, they could do well. And remember, last season, Milan did very well in the second half of the season under Gattuso. So to me, it makes sense that Maldini and Leonardo are trying to make up for lost time.
Yeah, Bakayoko has been dreadful. This man, I am not railing on him. In fact, I feel bad for him. David, Monaco had so many nice pieces a few years ago. Seems they all left Monaco for a lot of money. Bakayoko was clearly the bad apple of the bunch. He does not look comfortable. He does not look confident. He needs to go on a long, long holiday. He really needs to go back to square one. He looks totally, totally lost as a footballer. All right, next Twitter question. Let's stay on Milan, kind of. David, do you think we'll see Alexander Pato back on Milan?
So this is such an international break story. I feel like Pato being linked to Milan almost happens at least in 2 out of the 3 early international breaks of the season. Never fails. Now your boy Hazard has become the big name player who gets put in a bunch of transfer rumors every international break. Pato is the player that's the longing return to his former club. Then the other things that you hear in international breaks are stories on how close such and such player was to join the club, another club. And then we have, of course, the inflammatory Mino Raiola interview. So we had the Raiola interviews. We had the Pato rumors. We had Hazard. So we've almost hit all the, you know, the check mark for international break. Now, I haven't watched Pato play in China. I can't really judge that, but I'll have to say, to me, I think Milan needs to aim higher. Maybe I'm, you know, biased because I'm here based in the U.S., and I have to say Ibrahimovic has been a lot better than I expected him to be in the MLS. I think Ibra would make much more of an impact. But again, I don't watch Pato. I think Ibrahimovic would really bring to a lot of buzz to Milan, much more than Pato. It'd be really quite intriguing to see that happen there. So no offense to Pato, and maybe he's much better than I assume, but I think Milan needs to aim higher. And I know one of our listeners pointed out, you know, the cost, the wages and all that. I don't think there'd be a transfer fee involved with either player, so that really doesn't impact financial fair play. The wages, you know, obviously Ibra would be more expensive as a rental. I don't see him staying long-term. But to me, I'd make that move over Pato any day.
Well, I'll make a proposal to Milan. If they want Alvaro Morata and Willian, all I want back is Suso, and I'll call it a fair deal. So I think that's pretty good. All right, David, let's move away from football now. This is a good question. What is the best way to attract someone I want to interview on my podcast?
We love these questions. And look, you know, we are, you know, we have some experience, you and I, Alex, because we've done so many of them. Our podcast has grown a lot thanks to our listeners, but it's not like by any means our journey is complete by any means. And you and I are always constantly thinking of new ways to attract new guests. So I'll tell you a couple of things that work well. And I think this applies to, you know, if you're looking to write for a specific site or whatnot. You know, I don't think you need to blatantly kiss people's behind and, you know, be like really obvious in your efforts. But I think it's really important to engage with people you want to collaborate with. So if there's, you know, a guest you'd really like to have on your podcast, like retweet their work, send them questions. If, you know, as an example, if they have a podcast or an article where they solicit questions from listeners, you know, be the guy that sends like a really good question, like really show them what you have. You know, try to send smart questions. Like I think, you know, one thing that I've that I always try to improve on is my ability to interview people and ask questions that, you know, some of them are pretty obvious, but I try to come up with something original. So if you want to attract someone's attention, especially as a guest on the podcast, like tweet them some intriguing questions. You know, I can speak from my experience, the listeners that consistently send us good questions, like I start following them, I engage with them more. And I think that can open up a lot of doors. Now, I'll tell you an example of what you definitely shouldn't do. I had a friend of the podcast, someone that I really like, who's been a guest on multiple times, and that brought to my attention this up-and-coming writer. And she told me, oh, he really loves your work. He'd love to be on your podcast, blah, blah, blah. And I did some research on him. The guy didn't follow me, didn't really seem to be engaged with what we do. And, you know, maybe he has good taste. Maybe my stuff isn't that good. But if you do want to engage with someone, you know, kind of show interest in what they do. And, you know, I remember when we had the Bearded Genius on, and I thought he gave such great advice for people that want to write on a specific site. Like, show them examples. Like, if you want to write for Rolling Stone or write for 442, like, send articles to those sites and say, if I wrote for you, this is what the articles would look like. And look, we live at a time where it's so much easier to engage with people. If there's a writer that you like that has an email address on their bio, like send them an email. You'd be surprised. Like I have people that are in universities and they need help with their thesis. If I have time, I'm always happy to do it. It's just so much easier to engage with people now than even say 10 years ago.
Good advice there. All right, David, you'll like this. How do you rate Gamora compared to The Sopranos?
So I had a listener who said, you know, he sent us this question a few times. Now, longtime listeners of the pod know that we've talked a lot about Gamora in the past. We've compared it to Sopranos in the past. So my apologies to the listeners. But I wanted to revive this question. Also, because interestingly, yesterday I had a tweet exchange with Alan Sepinwall, one of my favorite TV critics who now writes for Rolling Stone, who is one of the biggest authorities on Sopranos. And I was surprised he didn't like Gamora that much. So before I get into that exchange, let me tell you, I know it's very easy to want to compare Gomorrah and Sopranos because of the mob aspect to both of them. If you're not familiar with Gomorrah, it's about the mob in the city of Naples. It's very gritty. But to me, the much better comparisons for Gomorrah are The Wire, because to me, the city of Napoli is a protagonist of that show, just like the city of Baltimore is in a lot of ways the subject of The Wire, and it's in a lot of different layers. So I see a big comparison to The Wire, also how the young kids are involved right away in the game and the life of crime. And the other show that I'd really compare it to is Breaking Bad, because to me, the main protagonist in Gomorrah, Jenny, his character arc is really, really similar to Walt White. Like, Jenny starts as kind of like a naive dude. He's just the son of the Don, doesn't really have street smarts. And then by the end of season one, he's like becoming a badass criminal. And then he's like a super badass criminal by the end of season two. So I think those are better comparisons. I think Sopranos is just a pretty different show. I feel like Sopranos, there's obviously the mobs a lot in that, but the way Sopranos started was really about the relationship between Tony and his mother, and they kind of changed course a little bit because the actress that played Tony's mother died sooner than they had predicted, so then it became a little bit more about the mob. But I think Breaking Bad and The Wire are better comps for Gomorrah. Now, it was interesting because Alan Sepinwall, again, is a fantastic movie critic. If you like Sopranos, Breaking Bad, The Wire, Mad Men, he's got some great books and articles on them. Check it out. He wasn't that impressed with Jenny's character arc. For those that watched season one, at one point, Jenny is sent to South America to work on a cocaine deal. And, you know, he comes back a complete badass. And Alan was saying, well, you know, I felt that was like a cheap character arc. He came back as a different person. Well, to me, on that show, I thought they showed really well how he became that. Maybe not right at first, but, you know, I don't want to spoil it too much. But they showed, to me, in my opinion, his character arc there. So I have to say, too, where I can't really compare Gomorrah to Sopranos is I thought the third season of Gomorrah, which has yet to come out in the U.S., to me was nowhere near as good as the first two. To me, that was just considerably worse. So I'm curious to see they're shooting Gomorrah season four, if it can get back on track. Look, Sopranos had a pretty weak season, so it's possible they get back on track as well. But definitely a show worth watching if you're based in the U.S. I think it's still Gomorrah. You can still catch it on Netflix. And if you like Sopranos, Breaking Bad, and The Wire, you should be all over.
All right. David, last Twitter question. Let's move to music now. Where do the Red Hot Chili Peppers rank amongst the bands of their era, and what is your favorite of their albums?
So great question. I got asked a few times on the Chili Peppers, and the timing of today is perfect because their bass player, Flea, today is his birthday. So I have to say what's really surprising in a good way to me about the Red Hot Chili Peppers of the bands, and they're a little bit before the 90s. They started in the late 80s. It's kind of surprising that them and Pearl Jam are the two bands that have kept going from that era. They're still huge. You know, you and I saw Pearl Jam at Fenway. Red Hot Chili Peppers can still sell out arenas, no problem. I don't think they could do stadiums on their own, but they could sell out an arena tour, no questions asked. So you gotta, you know, really admire their longevity. They were pretty wild guys. I've been really impressed with their longevity. They definitely have a very unique sound, very funky. Flea on bass, definitely very unique style. You know, for me, as far as where I rank them, I'm a huge fan of their former guitar player, John Frusciante. I think he's an absolute genius. You know, a lot of people, when they think Chili Peppers, they think of the rhythm section, Flea, and their drummer, who looks just like Farrell from Saturday Night Live. But to me, John Frusciante is really the Chili and the Red Hot Chili Peppers, like a real genius. To me, the closest thing to Jimi Hendrix that we've had since Hendrix. So Frusciante hasn't been in the band for a little while. I've lost a little interest because he's not there. I know a lot of people love their new guitar player. I think he's kind of like a cheap imitation of Frusciante. He tries to be sloppy like Frusciante, but not in a brilliant way. So I don't know. But I definitely respect a lot. The Chili Peppers love their stuff from the 90s. Definitely my favorite album is Blood Sugar Sex Magik. But Californication is a great, great, great record. Definitely more mature, not as funky as Blood Sugar Sex Magik. But if an alien came to my house and was like, you know, what are the Red Hot Chili Peppers? I'd play that album. But Californication is a more adult, great record. Those are the two that stand out to me. So I want to take this opportunity to thank all our listeners for sending in questions. As always, send them for the next podcast that you can tweet us with the Cultureland hashtag. I also want to take a moment to thank all those that leave reviews for the podcast. We've gotten some more. If you have yet to do so, if you're listening to us on your iPhone, please go to the podcast app, search Cultureland, scroll down, leave us a 5-star rating. Does a lot to help us grow. If you want to leave a comment, Alex and I read them all. And we also really appreciate those retweeting the podcast, telling their followers about us. So we're looking for questions and support for Thursday's podcast. So now we're going to close it on the interview, the debut of my colleague Gab Romano on the podcast. I think you'll really enjoy it, and we'll chat with you guys on Thursday. Okay, so with the derby coming up after this dreadful international break, we want to cover things with both Inter and Milan to kind of touch base on how the teams are doing going into the derby. And I wanted to kind of change things up a little bit on the podcast, bring in some new guests. We had last week my colleague Steve Moore to cover Lazio. We got fantastic feedback on him. And today we are joined for the first time my colleague Gabriele Romano, who is in Italy right now. He's been writing on Di Marzio's site for quite some time. For those of you that like my column on ESPN with the rating the transfer rumors, Gab helped me out all summer. Did really outstanding work. Gab also covers calcio on CS Sports Football and is very, very knowledgeable of calcio. So today we're going to cover Inter side of things, and on Thursday we'll cover Milan. So Gab, it's great to have you on Cultureland. Welcome on board.
Thank you for having me, David. It's great to be here.
Awesome. Okay, Gab, so Inter has had, not surprisingly, an up-and-down season. This is pretty typical of Pazza Inter. We had a rather difficult start, and everything turned around in the match against Spurs in the Champions League. So tell me a little bit, you know, after a very impressive summer mercato, has Inter met your expectations so far? Were you expecting them to be a little bit better? Or have they done better than you expected after all the changes?
Well, of course, at the beginning of the season, we had reasonably high expectation in Inter, since we had some good signings in the transfer window. So I thought we could do a great first part of the season. Anyway, it didn't go that well in the first few games, since Inter lost some points that they shouldn't have lost against Sassuolo, Torino, and then Parma. But I think, as you said, the turning point was the Tottenham game. So after that, they recovered quite well, and they are in line with the expectation I had at the start of the season. Maybe we could have had a couple more points, maybe on level points with Napoli at 18 right now. But all in all, I think that we have the right amount of points that we deserve. I didn't expect, of course, that we won 2 out of 2 in the Champions League, so that evens out the bad start in the Serie A.
Yeah, I think that's a very good way of putting it. So to me, it seems that Juve, more than ever, is now kind of on their own category. They've been, you know, taking Serie A by storm. They've won every match. So, you know, I know it's early in the season, but I kind of see them on their own level. I feel like Juve is really the anti-Juve is Juve itself. And that leaves, you know, other teams competing for the Champions League. You know, we have a group of teams that are on the upper echelon of Serie A. So let me ask you this. Do you think there's a bigger gap between Inter and Napoli or between Inter and a trio of Roma, Lazio and Milan?
That's a tough question. On paper, the bigger gap is between Napoli and Inter, I think. Napoli have really good players, a great coach, and they have done so much better than Inter in the last few seasons. They are already a complete team, a mature team, while on the other end, Inter are making progress slowly but surely. So it took a while, but you can finally see a long-term project behind the club's choices. And that's something that Inter has in common with the other three you mentioned, Roma, Lazio and Milan. So I think Inter is more close to them because it's a club going through changes like Milan or in perennial changes like Roma. So I think they are more close to the trio than Napoli. Of course, Juve is like on in a league of their own, so that doesn't count.
Yeah, certainly agree that we're there. So there's been a lot of new players at Inter. So I want to ask you point blank, which of the new acquisitions has impressed you the most so far at Inter?
Well, the two players that impressed me the most so far are two. One is definitely Asamoah. Going from Santon and last season version of Dalbert, Asamoah was a big upgrade, I believe. He's strong, he's good in defense, he can read the play, and has brought some of the winner mentality that he acquired at Juve. I knew he was good. He played very, very well last season. He also got ahead of Alexandro in Allegri's squad, but I didn't expect that he could have such a big impact in Inter. It was also a great piece of business by Ausilio, considered that he came on a free and that he plays in a position that Inter have been quite has had quite some problems in the last few years. While the other player that stood out in the first part of the season for me was De Vrij, who also came on a free. He was rock solid at the back, but also elegant and confident with the ball. So I think he's the perfect complement to Skriniar. So these are the two that impressed me the most, De Vrij and Asamoah.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, and you mentioned they're both free transfers. Usually with free, you know, tra virgolette, as we would say in Italy, as far as Bosman signings go, when you get two guys that are still in the prime of their careers, usually Bosman signings are a little bit older. Really, really impressive. So now let's talk about a player who arrived at Inter at the tail end of his prime. Some people would say his prime's probably or could be over because of his lifestyle. Is Raja Nainggolan. So I know the truth is probably in the middle, but I want to ask you, do you think there's a better chance at the end of the season we say, oh, wow, Nainggolan went back to what he was 2 years ago for Spalletti, and he's like still one of the best midfielders in all of Serie A? Or is there a better chance that at the end of the season we're like, you know what? Everyone criticized Roma for letting him go, but maybe they knew what they were doing. Of these two things, what is more likely in your opinion?
Well, in my opinion, it won't be a total flop for Inter, especially under Spalletti. However, it's true that his performances have not been up to the standard that he set two seasons ago with Spalletti in Roma. He played some okay matches, some above average matches, and he scored some clutch goals like the ones against PSV. But I think there's the chance that he could be a significant player for Inter, although not as he was for Roma 2 seasons ago. So, as you said, the truth is in the middle this time.
Yeah, I agree with that. And actually, I was talking to someone within Roma not that long ago. We were talking about Nainggolan. And an interesting thing they pointed out to me that I had never considered, that for Roma, it made sense. One of the reasons they decided to move on is they have so many young players that they were like, we really can't have Nainggolan around these young players who were trying to give discipline and follow the rules.
Yeah, example.
Like at Inter is a more veteran team. So when I had never thought of it in those terms, and I was like, geez, you know, that makes a lot of sense that he's a much better fit, because Inter has a much more veteran team. So let's talk about young players, and let's talk about Lautaro Martinez. So he was a very impressive signing, because very highly rated player from South America, linked to a lot of top clubs in Europe. And we know Inter has a thing or two with Argentine players. They use their connection to Milito to sign him. So let me ask you kind of how you envision Lautaro Martinez, especially this season. Do you see him as someone that's going to be a great backup for Icardi? Which might sound dismissive, but last season, you know, we had Eder. You know, we previously had Gabigol, so there was really no one that Inter could rely upon when Icardi isn't there. Or do you think Spalletti should try to make it work with both Icardi or Lautaro Martinez? Or does it make more sense, because Inter has a lot of good wingers, to go more with one classic striker, Icardi, and have Lautaro Martinez slowly ease into the season? How do you see that going, and what would you do? Maybe they're not the same thing.
Well, of course, I'd love to see more of Lautaro. But as Spalletti said after the Spal game, maybe Inter are not ready to play with both Icardi and Lautaro at the same time. Playing Lautaro right now from the start with Icardi would mean to change to a different formation, maybe 4-4-2 or 3-5-2. And I don't think that would be beneficial for Inter, because the team is starting to gel and players are starting to understand the coach's idea. So I don't think it would be the right move for Inter right now, playing with two strikers. But in the future, I can definitely see him playing up front with his teammate, his Argentine teammate Icardi. He could play also behind, just a few meters behind him, in the position where Nainggolan is currently playing. So we could see Nainggolan. I would play Nainggolan when he regains a bit of fit after missing a good part of the preseason. I would play him in the midfield in the 4-2-3-1 and have Lautaro, that plays like second striker, in the final third just behind Icardi. That would be a viable solution for me in the future. But right now, I don't see him playing from the start. But he's, as you said, is a great upgrade in comparison to Eder and Gabigol that Inter had before. So I'm thrilled to see what he could bring to the team in the future.
Absolutely. So now let's move to off the pitch. Marotta, somewhat surprisingly, left Juve. Seems that maybe it wasn't the most clean exit from the club. And I know there's a lot of buzz. Get a lot of questions from Man United fans, Arsenal fans. But, you know, my gut, and I could be wrong, is he's likely going to stay in Italy. Maybe it'll be with the Federation. Maybe it will be at another club. But when you look at Inter as a club, and, you know, we had Sabatini briefly working with Ausilio. That didn't last too long. Would you be in favor of Inter strongly pursuing Marotta to work with Ausilio? Because I kind of see a little bit of similarities in the dynamic of what Marotta had at Juve. So what's your take on that? Is that something you'd like to see?
Well, I'm a bit torn on this one. Because if I have to give an answer. Just as a supporter, I would say no, because the recent history of influential figures coming from Juventus to Inter isn't that great, to use an euphemism, like Lippi or even Fassone, that played a significant role in Juventus building their new stadium. And at Inter, it is remembered only for, or mostly for, the Condogbia deal. But on the other hand, if I have to think this through rationally, I would be in favor of that, because it's undeniable that Marotta did an outstanding job at Juventus. And he may be the professional figure that Inter needs right now. He knows football, he comes from a winning side. And although that can be some similarities with the Ausilio and Sabatini duo, I think the Marotta and Ausilio would work in two different fields, of work. Yes. So, all in all, I'll let my rational side win and think that signing Marotta would be beneficial for Inter and would also be a sign of a great ambition for the club, in my opinion.
So now let's, before I put you on the spot and get your prediction for the derby, which is coming up on Sunday, let's pull out your crystal ball. Where do you expect Inter to finish the season? As you mentioned, the start in Serie A wasn't that great against some lower table teams. They've gotten a little bit back on track. They started the Champions League really well. But where do you think all this ends for Inter?
Okay, I think the bare minimum is to finish in the top four. That's the standard they have set last season. I think that Inter is way behind Juventus and just a bit behind Napoli. So I think they could finish third in the table, or they could, if things go the right way for them, they could even battle for the second place against Napoli, I think. So that would be a realistic result, in my opinion.
And what do you expect in the Champions League? What's your expectations there?
Well, in the Champions League, things are going well, unexpectedly, I must say. I think that two games against Barcelona are fundamental for Inter, but the Tottenham game, that would be decisive. So if they manage to get some points against Barcelona and not lose against Tottenham, I think they could go through to the next round. And who knows? I think that a good result would be reaching the round of 16. Let's see what they can do in the next few games.
Yeah, that would be definitely good, even revenue-wise. That would help Inter a lot. Okay, so you gave us excellent insight on Inter so far. Derbies can be always unpredictable. Usually, I lean with the underdog in the derby, but it seems both teams, you know, Milan's had a resurgence, maybe not as long as Inter's. Both teams come in with a lot of momentum. So what's your prediction for the derby? How do you think it's going to end on Sunday?
Well, Milan are gaining confidence right now. They have been playing also quite well. Considering both team forms right now, I would say a draw, maybe with a lot of goals, like 2-2 or 3-3 goals. One thing is for sure that Suso and Bonaventura will score, because they always score against Inter. But I think, a draw could be the result this time.
Okay, I'm going to make my prediction on Thursday. So far, I'm leaning with you. So, Gab, it's great to have you on. This was his first of, I know, many appearances on the podcast. As I mentioned, Gab's a contributor on the Marzio site. You can read his own articles on C Sports Football. I'm sure he's going to branch out even more. In January, when we come back with the transfer rumor raider on ESPN, you know, Gab has been helping me out and doing a fantastic job. So, Gab, it was a real pleasure for coming on. Thanks for joining us on Calcio Land today.
Thank you for having me.